Leafs podcast.
They have won the Stanley Cup!
Subscribe so you don't miss an episode on Spotify, SoundCloud, or Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Here's Nick D'Souza and Kevin Papetti.
This is the Everything Leafs podcast, and we are back with the same old crew of Kevin Papetti and Nick D'Souza. The voice you hear right now is someone new. I am Sean Stansfield stepping in. This is my tryout to be a potential host of the Everything Leafs podcast. Thank you for bringing me into the episode where the Leafs lose in seven in Boston yet again, but I guess that gives us some good content. Kevin is here. Nick is here. Kevin, I want to throw to you first here before we get into the stats and the facts and all the stuff that obviously you are the best at. I want to get to some emotion. Where was your head at as we headed into game seven? Obviously coming off 3-1 deficit, tie it up, 2-2-1 wins. What were you thinking going into the game?
It's a weird feeling when you see a team like go down 3-1 because you just like write them off completely and you think like it is a bit, if you're up 3-1 and it's the other way around, game seven's like terrifying. When it's like when you see the Leafs done, like it felt like they were done after four games. They made it a series, it went to overtime. It just seemed like everything was going wrong, right? Like the Matthews injury, the Nylander injury. It obviously Joseph Woll was the next one. Like, and then you have this, I know Florida lost game one, but it just felt like they were gonna lose to Florida. Anyways, like that was kind of the feeling I got like once it finally ended. It's just a weird year. We had all these injuries and you had the 3-1 where they're down. But it would definitely have been cool to see Boston blow 3-1 for back-to-back years. Like that was, I think, I'd kind of lost hope on the Leafs as a Stanley Cup contender, but it still would have been nice to see a win at the Garden in game seven.
You could feel it a bit when that goal goes in, the Nylander goal, just under 11 minutes left. And the building felt like Scotiabank Arena, not like the TD Garden that we're used to. Nick, you've been in that building a bunch.
Didn't sound the same.
Nervous. They were nervous. And yet here we are doing an obituary. But you can't let that goal in, can you, Nick? 1 minute later?
Well, I definitely thought Boston was coming back right after the goal. And then obviously they pin in the Leafs. I don't know. I didn't think the Samsonov goal was that bad. I just thought that they were getting peppered a little bit after that goal. But it's tough to see a goal go in right after. Obviously, a huge goal for Nylander to send the Leafs up. But I probably feel similar to Kevin. Like, I think I kind of went into game seven feeling like it was just found money. I wasn't too confident with them against Florida. I didn't think that this team was, you know, all that good. I don't think they were like a top five or top seven team in the NHL. Even at 5-on-5, they were probably like a 10th or 9th best team. And then when you look at their special teams, obviously that's what bit them in the end. So for me, I just really wanted them to beat Boston. That was kind of, was going to be the Stanley Cup, I guess, of this year. If they could just finally get through Boston and then obviously take their chances against Florida. But yeah, it was a very weird series. Like once before the game, once we saw that Woll was out, it was just, you know, it's an odd feeling going into the game, but ultimately they can't blame goaltending in game seven. So yeah, just a weird game in general.
Was it on that last save? Go ahead, Kevin.
I thought that goal was bad, but like, I think just in the, like, Samsonov wasn't great in the series, but like the Leafs never scored. So I think everyone just goes, you know, it's not on the goalies. Kind of, I think Samsonov could have easily had a shutout in that game. You'd like to see it. Like maybe Joseph Woll does. But again, when you only let in one goal in regulation, it's just tough to.
Tough to complain too much. It. Like, yeah, it was, they were just getting, there was a big flurry there. In the end, obviously the goal that does go in looks pretty soft, but I mean, he's kind of off balance. It is what it is. He had a fine game for me.
If you are saying he could have had a shutout and we have a chance to win, getting a shutout, right? Obviously, no goals go in. Not an ideal way to go in to try and win a series. It's like, you know what we should just do? Not let in a single goal because we know that our offense isn't going to produce right now. What is it? Going back to the Florida series, Kevin, it's what? The 10 game or 14 straight games back to Tampa? With them not having over three goals in a playoff game, how many are you going to win having that.
Yeah. The offense is a major issue. And I think last year you look at the lineup when you had O'Reilly as the third line center and you just go like, this is a deep offensive lineup. This year, you know, we knew year after year, like it's not like this is a new story. Like we knew that scoring has always been the problem come playoffs. I know, you know, a few weeks in the offseason, everyone thinks it was physicality. It's scoring. This team can't score more than 3 goals. And it just felt when you look at their lineup, like with all the cap space they had last year, you have Pontus Holmberg as your third line center. You had a fine series, but that guy's a fourth line center, right? Like he wasn't on for a goal four. That third line did not score with Robertson and Yarncroke. And then your fourth line has Ryan Reeves, who hasn't scored a playoff goal in 71 games. It's just like, where's the offense coming? Like you're relying on your top six to score, which has always been the case. And they're up against good defensive teams, right? Like, yes, you expect more from Matthews and Marner and Nylander, Tavares, but like they have Lindholm, they have McAvoy, they have Carlo. As soon as you have an injury, which is fortunately for the Leafs, been a bit of a common theme with Tavares going down, you had Muzzin go down 1 year. This year it was a combination of Nylander and Matthews. And yes, you had a little bit more, like you had someone like Domi, you had someone like Bertuzzi, but you know, you lost someone like Ryan O'Reilly. Like it just felt like they didn't have the scoring depth that they needed. And I know that's not going to be the number one talking point, but when you have a core four that's not scoring much and you don't have scoring depth, you can't really survive, right? You kind of need at least one or the other. And if you're going to win 4 rounds, you got to survive one round where Marner doesn't go point per game and Matthews doesn't go point per game, right? Like one of the four, they're not going to be at their best. You need scoring depth for that series. Maybe that was this first series. Like, who knows? Maybe the core four would have done amazing in round two. Who knows? But yeah, Boston deserves credit. Swayman's a good goalie, but it just didn't feel like the Leafs were generating like high danger chance after high danger chance. Felt like both teams were trying to win 2-1.
So then what is the major storyline? Because I think through 4 games, it was the special teams getting caved. But now we sit here post game 7 and it feels like the scoring and now the core four, which we'll get into in a little bit, is the piece. What's the number one storyline for you coming out of the 7-game series?
For me, obviously the offense, like Kevin just touched upon it. But the power play and the offense, obviously they tie in with each other, right? Like you go 1-for-21 or 1-for-22 on the series, you expect to lose, especially when your penalty kill is also struggling. But offensively, you know, you look at the lines and they really constructed the lines this year to be good offensively. One problem I do have is obviously the depth that third line didn't score, but I think the defense really kind of let them down offensively, and offense from the defense is something that the Leafs have struggled for a couple years now. But one thing that they were quite good at in the past is they were quite good at moving the puck. And in the past, the Leafs were losing games because they weren't able to create enough offense when they were actually in the offensive zone. But they were in the offensive zone quite a bit. You think about those Columbus series, the Montreal series, and even in the first Tampa series, they were in the offensive zone quite a bit. They were kept to the outside and they just can never get into the inside. When you look at this series and last year, at the deadline last year, they made a decision. They wanted to get tougher on the blue line. They wanted to get bigger and they sacrificed a lot of kind of neutral zone skill. And they got outplayed last year in the playoffs by Tampa, but, you know, kind of squeaked by with some goals, some timely goals. And then this year for big chunks of this series, they really struggled in the neutral zone. They had to dump a lot of pucks in, and which is fine. Like you can generate offense that way, but it definitely makes it more difficult if you're not kind of generating clean exits and getting into the other team's zone cleanly. So for me, I think Edmondson and Lyubushkin and Benoit played fine when you look at their own kind of like what their expectations should be. But as soon as you get players like that, the ceiling of what your defense is capable of doing, especially in puck moving and offense, I mean, it just drops completely. So I think they were fine, but I mean, Edmondson had 3 big chances. He had like two of the most important chances on game 7, and you just don't expect him to score in those because at the end of the day, it's Joel Edmondson. So that was a big storyline for me.
Yeah, I think to be fair to this team, like it is hard to fully evaluate them just because of all the injuries. Like they did well to force overtime game seven, considering the Nylander situation, the Matthews situation, and then eventually the Wall situation. I thought the game plan from Keith was to play those 2-1 games, which, you know, I do think players like Marner deserve some criticism, but you could tell the game plan from both sides was like, we're going to play mistake-free 2-1 hockey, right? Like, that's kind of how the Leafs were built, as you're alluding to. Like, that blue line, it just, you watch other playoff games, and it's just like, I forgot how well other blue lines can move the puck. Like, even Erik Gustafsson, I was watching him on the Rangers. You know, we saw him with the Leafs. Not that he's an outstanding player, but that guy can create offense on the back end. And, you know, not that you want every defenseman to be like that, but like, I do think someone like Lyubushkin had a decent series and has a role, but it just felt like they had too much of the same thing, right? Like when Morgan Rielly wasn't on the ice, you had Benoit on the left side, then you had Edmondson, and neither could move the puck. Like it felt like Marner set up Edmondson a billion times. That guy had no offensibility. Benoit could not, he's, you know, good contract. I thought he had a fine series playing with McCabe, but you need one of those guys. Having two of them just didn't really make any sense. Like you had that third pair. A lot of the times, especially in the regular season, you see Toronto's third pair go out and they just crush the competition. Like how many times have we seen a third pairing defenseman in Toronto with like great on ice numbers, right? Like we've seen Travis Dermott. We've seen Martin Marincin have good fancy stats. Like Timothy Liljegren, we've seen Sandin. Rasmus Sandin. And it just felt like, you know, I thought Liljegren was just okay, but you know, that pair, yes, I liked Edmondson. Like it's nice to have someone who's, you know, dependable, doesn't make huge mistakes, but I don't know. As a third pairing guy, I just don't know if that was the right fit when you already had Benoit, when you already had Lyubushkin. And I think you just look at this team and you look at the regular season. Like, I think one narrative that happens in Toronto sometimes is like, we act as if the Leafs are the President's Trophy winner every year, and it's a complete shock that they lose in the first round. But you look at the playoffs right now, the second round, and if you just sort the standings by regular season point percentage, eight of the top nine are advanced to the second round. And the only team that didn't was Winnipeg, who had to face Colorado, right? So not a huge upset there. I think, like, step one, it's like, let's not worry about these guys choking from playoff time. Like, can we build a half decent regular season team? Like, Austin Matthews had 69 goals. William Nylander had a career year, just missed 100 points. And they're still not a top five team in the regular season. Like, what do you need? Matthews to score 90 to be a top five team? So, you know, this whole thing that like doesn't work in the playoffs, I get it because the scoring hasn't been there. But at the same time, like, this team just wasn't good enough this year, right? Like they could have said, I think the optimistic side was that they'd, you know, they'd be all these playoff players who step up. Bertuzzi looks like he did last year. Domi goes off, which he kind of did. He had a decent series. That Lyubushkin and Edmondson would thrive in the playoff style game. And it just felt like they weren't dominant. Like they played these coin flip series basically, and they hoped to win at the last minute.
Yeah, it's, I think almost the North Division season kind of threw everyone off in terms of regular season expectations, right? Like they really dominated North Division. They still come out, they still lose. Just feels like the fan base in general since then has been like, okay, regular season doesn't matter. We need to win in the playoffs. But I mean, it's a great point. I mean, they've never been the President's Trophy winner. They've never won the Atlantic Division. They're
this
usually
was the year to playing, do it too, right?
This was easily the year to do it. I mean, Florida had a really good second half to the season, I would say, and they kind of pushed away from everyone else. But I mean, Boston was a flawed team. And I think that's where Sean, you and I, when we were on the podcast before, we talked about, I said that Tampa and Florida were the two best teams in the Atlantic going into the playoffs. Obviously, Florida just rolled over Tampa, but I wasn't that impressed with Boston.
Doesn't mean you were wrong. It just meant that Florida was that much better. Just to be fair.
They had some puck luck and whatnot. But I mean, at the end of the day, like I wasn't impressed with Boston. And that the special teams just completely, like, you can't go 50% at the penalty kill and 4% on the power play and expect to win a game. Obviously, defensively, they were quite good against a team that kind of struggles to generate offense. So you know, it's kind of like the chicken and the egg when it comes to how they were defensively. It would have been nice to kind of see the Leafs against Florida to evaluate them against a team that was kind of a top caliber team, but obviously we don't get that now.
Yeah, what I meant with winning the President's Trophy, like, you had some terrible teams in the playoffs this year. Like, the Leafs beat Washington.
Yeah.
10 out of 10 times. The Islanders were not good. So at some point, it's like, if you can become the one seed, you kind of make your own luck at times, right? Like, you just get an easier matchup and you can get a quick win. And sometimes your opponent in the second round is tired and you have a bit of an advantage. But I think, as you said, like, this team just wasn't elite. And when you can't score, and I mean, you look at Boston's lineup, like, their centers, Connor Geeky, Pavel Zacha, I forget their third line center now. it's a weak center group.
Charlie, like, Coyle was, yeah.
Coyle.
In second.
But it's not, like, you look at the team they had last year, right? Like, with Bergeron, Krejci, Taylor Hall, Nick Foligno, Orlov on the back end, like, Garnet Hathaway for, like, a fourth line type of role. Like, that team was so much better last year, and they lost so much talent. And it just, like, how can you not be this team? I think you're correct. Like, I wasn't impressed with Boston either, but it felt like the Leafs, and what they do every year is they'll play these, like, 1-1 games, and then it's just like a complete coin flip of who gets the first good scoring chance in overtime. Like, when they beat Tampa, it felt, you know, there's so many close games where the Leafs just barely edge them out. And then, you know, when they play Florida, low scoring, they play this series, low scoring, like, they could have easily won game 7, you know, if they got the first chance. Like, they play these coin flip games. They're not dominating. Like, we saw in plenty of other teams in the first round just dominate, where the point is, like, there's no luck here. Like, this team was going to win the series. The Leafs can't dominate.
It's a great point that you brought up about the team in general, and that they haven't been overly done. Like, they've been, if you just look at whatever, on a 100-point pace through the entire Keith era. So everyone is always defaults to, this is a great regular season team. And the thing that it always shocked me every year when we do this, everyone complains about the playoff format, right? And yet, when I'm in my group chat with my family, which is, again, just some of your old, you know, angry uncles that all have hated William Nylander for forever, a lot of times when you actually just sort it 1 through 8, they're playing the team that they probably should be playing. It's the other teams that might be getting screwed in that moment. You're 100% right. This was the year to go take the Atlantic Division and set yourself up. Now, they probably would have been set up to play Tampa, which wouldn't have been ideal, but hey, who knows? You could have gotten higher, won the President's Trophy, and played Washington. You're beating Washington. You could have gotten yourself in a better position. You wouldn't get the Islanders, but, you know, some years you get Washington, some years you're going to get stuck with, like, Dallas with Vegas. But you give yourself the best chance. We talked about the scoring. We've talked about the special teams. I want to talk about the injuries, because I think I don't want to make this an excuse. But when your team is so top heavy, we talk about that they didn't show up. In some instances, they weren't allowed to. With Nylander missing the first 3 games, Matthews playing hobbled in 3 and 4, obviously getting pulled in the third period of the fourth game, coming back for game 7. Nick, what? Not to get too general about this, about what the role that might have played, but do we take that as an excuse, or we take that as listen? That's what you've set yourself up as. This is what you're going to have to go through.
I think probably neither. I don't think it's an excuse. I think we have a large enough sample size to know what this team is in the regular season versus what they are in the playoffs, especially in deciding games. So I don't think it's an excuse by any means. I don't think it really matters in terms of how they were built. I think you look across the league. I mean, if Colorado loses McKinnon, their chances of winning 4 series in a row, right, or even a competitive series goes down. The year before Colorado won, they lost Kadri. He got suspended and they ended up losing that series. So I think ultimately, regardless of what team you are, if you lose a top player, you're just going to have a tougher time winning a game. So it's obviously awful luck. I mean, Nylander has missed a game almost never. Matthews was relatively healthy. He played game 82, and then suddenly he has like these different issues that are coming up during the series. So I don't think it's an excuse, but I also don't think it really reflects much on the core four or that philosophy, to be honest. I think there's other things that when you talk about the core four, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, later. So I'm not going to get into it too much in terms of roster construction, but it's just bad luck. And obviously the Leafs were playing a very defensive series. They were able to win game 5 and 6 regardless without Matthews, through some kind of timely point shots from McCabe in game 5. And game 6, they got that Nylander goal. That was kind of him circling around the blue line. So, and they played a phenomenal defense. So I don't think they used it as an excuse. I don't think they'll use it as an excuse now. And I think it just is what it is. It's just bad luck.
If this was like a one-off, I think everyone would be understanding. I think everyone's kind of just tired of excuses because it's been one playoff series win in 8 years. I think the Leafs have been upset before, like Montreal that was a big underdog, Columbus was a big underdog. You'd expect after all these years, the Leafs would have upset someone. Hasn't happened. I do think if you went back and like we're trying to predict how many series wins they'd have, I think you'd think like 3 or 4, like they'd have more trips to the second round. I'm just not sure how many like true cup contenders they put together. Like when you go back and look at the early years, I think, you know, it wasn't on the core. It was, and obviously Tavares wasn't there. Like they waited a long time to address the blue line. You go back and you look at the blue lines, you see like Ainsley on the top pair, Zaitsev on the second pair, Polak on the third pair. I think once they finally got it, Tavares and Muzzin, they had a chance. Obviously the Kadri trade was terrible. Sometimes you go back and you look at the playoff lineups and you go, yeah, I see why they were out in the first round. Like even if they made it to the second round, they would have been out. I thought last year was really the one year where they had like a true team that could have potentially went all the way. But again, this year, like A, the injuries, and then B, you look at the blue line. Like I think we're going to look back on this blue line in a few years and go, yeah, that was never going to.
Can we look at that now?
Sometimes in the moment, it looks okay. And then like a few years pass and you're like, ooh, like, why did I not see that? So yeah, even now it looks weak, but I don't know. This franchise has been cursed with the injuries, with like the pandemic happened at the worst possible time.
Yeah, cap doesn't go up after that. Yep.
Go up once they lock it, everybody. Everything's been cursed. Like I think even like the Montreal series, like plenty of these series come down to one bounce and they're never the team to get the bounce. But at the same time, like they haven't been a dominant team. And especially this year, like you look at the seasons they had, the cap space they had, like they didn't have bad contracts on the books heading into this year. They still don't really, but like they had a lot of opportunity to build around the core four. I think some years you look at it and you go, okay, like it's hard to build, you know, the depth that you need to go on a win. But this was a year where they had the cap space and it just felt like they kind of wasted it. You look at the lineups they put out, like when you have Matthews and his cap space out, instead of icing a $83.5 million roster like everyone else, now it's a 72. You had Brody for $5 million not playing. And then you had, like with Klingberg, they never really replaced him. Like if you look at the deadline, like their deadline strategy was they're going to use their cap space so they can have Martin Jones on the roster. So they can have Ryan Reeves. They can have Noah Gregor. Like I think they had like 9 defensemen and 3 goalies. Like that's how they
Connor used Timmins. They kept up
cap space, right? Like it's not like they. It's almost like they were the reverse Golden Knights. Like the Golden Knights go in with like a $95 million cap in their starting lineup, and I'm making up a number, but it's probably something like that. And then the Leafs are at like 70 or 65 million. It's like, what are you guys doing? I don't know. Bad luck, but also I think there were some mistakes made along the way.
I think that's like a big consistency among cup winners in the past 5 years. Now, obviously with, you know, the Tampa in the bubble year where Stamkos came back from injury, Stone coming back from injury and them winning the cup in Vegas. I think it's a lot more obvious when you look at the cap hits and it's above what's expected. But even when you look at like effective, I guess like effective cap hit or effective value, how much are you getting? Like, for example, a player like Benoit, he was paid this year quite a little. You're probably getting like a $3 million player in terms of what he's providing. they just didn't have like many players that were really giving them a ton of value this year.
Oh, whereas, I disagree big time.
Like who?
Like Joseph Wall, Jake McCabe, Matt Nyes. Sorry,
in terms of their acquisitions.
Their acquisitions, if you look at their offseason.
I'm sorry, you got to give Benoit a little bit of credit here. Guys,
like I said Benoit.
Okay, Benoit's just want to make sure. I want to make he's probably the only one that punching above his weight class. Yeah. Even Domi, you could
Domi
argue.
For sure.
You could
no,
argue.
Domi for sure.
But it's like you got to isolate
a little
it.
Bit over.
Yeah, you have to isolate because his first 30 games were so bad from a production perspective that, you know, but he's a $3 million player. The Bertuzzi stuff came on second half of the year. It's one of those things with this team. You can't look at it in a vacuum. You guys both said it. Right. It's not like, hey, this one year, yeah, they went 7 against Boston, both fine regular season teams, probably neither a cup contender, and it went 7 and they lost. But it's the 8-year span that you have to take into consideration. Kevin, you made the point, I think it was a good one, that how many series were they truly favorites? You brought up Columbus. I think that series was still like a 7-8 series or whatever.
That was the worst Leafs team we've seen too.
Like, awful. That was the Ayers year, right? Like that's, and add in the pandemic, all that. Montreal is the glaring one that jumps out. Like you can't lose that. Then Montreal goes to the goddamn
Tavares
final.
Tavares.
Yeah, Tavares going out. But you still win that series. I'm sorry.
Price played so well. Like I get the Montreal series.
And Muzzin went down, but they still should have won that series regardless.
But you can't look at. You can't look at this team in a vacuum. You have to look at it in totality. And the one constant, which I think is a nice segue here, is Shanahan. So I want to look at management. What are the boys thinking here? Because
for me, it's. I mean, anytime the higher you go into management, the more difficult it is, one, to replace the person, and two, to kind of speculate. I would say it's so tough to know like what Shanahan day in day out is. Like with the team, one thing that I can say is it feels like Shanahan's quite good at building like a front office. The Leafs are like quite good at scouting. They're quite good at player development. Their analytics team seems like it's one of the better in the league. So their assistant GMs seem like they're quite kind of competent at what they do. Whereas when you think about what this team looked like before Shanahan was in, and what management looked like, it was just poor decision after poor decision for about like a 10-year span. So I don't really have a strong opinion on Shanahan. If they fire him, I mean, it is what it is. We'll see what they do. But I definitely think there's a chance of kind of more chaos versus more stability if they do get rid of him. Kev, what do you think?
I think Shanahan's a fairly smart guy. I don't know, like, I don't really necessarily want to say change for the sake of change. I think, as you said, like, before he was here, it was a bit of a mess.
A bit?
But at the same time, like, if there's a better candidate, then go hire the better candidate. Like, if I'm Keith Pelley, I want to hear his plan. I want to hear, like, his thoughts on things. And
you want to hear the Shanna plan?
I want to hear the new Shanna plan. But from the outside looking in, it's almost impossible, right? Like, we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know what he thinks versus what True Living thinks versus what Dubas thought. Like, we have no idea, right? Like, did Shanahan drive the Kadri trade? Or was he completely against it, but just said, sure, like, you're the GM, you can do whatever you want. Did Shanahan, was he the one who wanted Marlowe? Like, who knows, right? Like, it's hard to know what's decisions the GM is making versus the president. And it's from the outside looking in, like Shanahan just never talks to media. We just don't really know his thoughts on things. So I have no idea. Like I don't have a strong opinion on him. I don't really have a strong opinion on any of them. Like I think True Living has questions. I don't think he's going anywhere after a year. That'd be surprising, but
I don't
didn't
think
have
so
the either. Best,
no,
didn't have the best so, off season. Was kind of terrible at the end in Calgary. Had some good years in Calgary too. Like, I want to be fair to him because he kind of had a bad situation last year where he arrived so late.
And just got here. Like, he couldn't even be on the draft floor till what, pick 17 or whatever it was?
Yeah, but like, you know who Ryan Reeves is. You know
For in 3 years and you can't send him down, you can't do anything. The Shanahan thing, though, And I'm going to tie two things together here that is going to make Kevin happy. I'm going to bring the Leafs and the Jays into the conversation in one thing. It's pretty clear, it is, even though we're on the outside looking in, we have had a nice little look-see, at least, into the culture of the Maple Leafs through their Amazon documentary, that it's not, that it wasn't just Shanahan sitting on the outside and running the business, making sure that the Dunedin facility was fully built up and that he was managing the business plans and the budget and doing all that stuff while Ross Atkins has had a little bit more autonomy over the baseball decisions. You could see that he had some day-to-day operation in this construction of the team. And that's actually, it's not controversial to say. Big reason Dubas isn't here is his results in that press conference weren't great, but also he wanted more autonomy directly to the board of MLSE. With Shanahan, it kind of comes down to the old adage in sports. You can't fire all the players, but you can fire the coach, the general manager, or the president. And the rumors that we're hearing now is that they might fire Shanahan and just not replace him, which just screams of Keith Pelley being CEO and being like, I'm going to be a little bit more hands-on with this. I don't know what the right direction is. I'm not saying that, I'm not advocating for someone to lose their job. And to you guys' point, we also don't know to the minutia. Did he say TJ Brody, or not TJ Brody, Tyson Berry for Nazem Kadri and Kerfoot was like, we need to do this? Was he saying, let's give Ryan Reeves 3 years? Was he doing this and that? We don't know that for sure. But there has been one constant around the team over the last 11 years, and it's been Shanahan. So I can see where fans, hi, fan, would jump in and just be like, hey, I want you out of here. I was screaming from the rooftops for it after the Montreal series. I wanted everybody gone. Everyone but Austin Matthews I wanted traded. This is going to be a little trickier. You got two of your core four signed to long-term extensions with no move clauses. And the other two with 1 year left, also with no move clauses. But God, you guys are way too logical. Obviously we don't know if he's like pulling all the strings, but he's one person versus 24.
One thing I will say that maybe is probably lower on the logical is I think it would be the leafiest thing for, and this is just based on speculation, what we've kind of heard is for the Leafs clearly were kind of planning on extending Dubas last year. Him and Shanahan have had some issues in terms of autonomy. Dubas, I think on one of the podcasts that I can't remember which one it was where I saw it, but Dubas wanted to go straight to MLSC about big deals rather than going through each kind of level of Shanahan and then to MLSC. And
then they fire whatever Shanahan happened a year later.
And then, yeah, like you literally fire Dubas because he wants more autonomy. He goes somewhere else. And then a year later, you fire Shanahan.
Get rid of the position completely. Him. Yeah.
You go, you know what? That guy was kind of right, but we're going to leave it with these two new guys here. I think it'd just be really leafy. I mean, it's hilarious.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the Dubas thing too much, but like I do think it was either Dubas or Shanahan, based on the money, like based on what Dubas got, and
now we might have neither.
Well, I don't really care who the president is.
Yeah,
like let's see the decisions, whether it's if it's Treliving Shanahan or someone else. Like, I'll judge it based on the decisions they make. Like, it'd be very nice, whether it's Treliving, whether it's Eric Tulsky at GM, I don't know. Like, let's just see this organization make good decisions, you know, like they have in the entry draft lately. Let's go see them find some diamonds in the rough and make some smart signings and hopefully be a true contender. Because when you have Matthews, you know, probably the third best player in the game, could be first in any given year. You have, you know, what Nylander did this year. You expect that this team could be a true contender and go all the way. It just hasn't happened. And again, like I think year after year we talked about the choking in the playoffs, but I don't know. Like, to me, it's like we have no reason to believe that team was a true contender because they weren't the regular season. Like, we saw at the start of the year, they could not win in regulation. Yes, goaltending was terrible, but you know, it was never a dominant team. Like, even by expected goals, they're like ninth. Right? Like, it's not like this is a team that's just dominating the stat sheet every night, and come playoff time, they lose like Boston lost last year. Like, they're the 4-5 and they lose. Like, if you're explaining this to like an NBA fan that knew nothing about hockey, you'd be like, the 5 seed lost to the 4 seed. The
Orlando Magic lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers. No one is surprised.
No one's surprised. So it's like, make us surprised 1 year. Like, be the 1-8. Like, win a President's Trophy. At least contend for it. And then, you know, if it doesn't translate to the playoffs, it doesn't translate to the playoffs. But I don't know. I do think Keith might be gone, because it's tough, because, you know, I think Shanahan took a lot of heat for the Babcock thing with all those years left on the contract. And I don't think Keith's contract started. So.
It has not. Two more years left starting this July 1st. So let's get to the meat and potatoes here. The core four. We should include Riley in this as well. It's the core five, but core four for argument's sake. What do we see? What are we thinking? Lots of articles out there by, you know, The Athletic's Chris Johnston and lots of people talking about this within, you know, the media community around the Toronto Maple Leafs, that it's time. Some hardcore fans would have argued time was in 2021. Others argue that these are four of the best players that have ever played on this team. You just need to do a better job of building around it. Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things when it comes to the core four. The first thing I'll say is the formula, like, so many people say, oh, the formula, you can't win with 40 million and four people. I don't agree with that. I definitely think the formula itself can be done. Is it difficult if you are the GM or you're the management? 100%. You can't make big mistakes. You can't have a John Klingberg type contract out there. You need to kind of fill in the blanks with valuable players, and you need to find those diamonds in the rough. You need to be drafting well so you can have entry-level contracts onto your on your books, so that you can have guys like Nyes and Robertson and Holmbergs in your lineup contributing. So do I think it's easy? No. But I do think it's a formula that we've seen can create rosters that are legitimate cup contenders. I think last year they were a legitimate cup contender. They were able to add a player like O'Reilly at the deadline. The first Tampa series, that team was very good on paper. And they outplayed Tampa, who ended up going to the finals that year. And obviously with the North Division, obviously it didn't turn out well, but that was a pretty good hockey club that year. So I think overall, the formula itself works. Now, in saying that, does that mean that going forward, the Leafs should be keeping this core four? I'm not sure. I think it gets pretty complicated. I think we've seen enough of it to know that this particular group of five players might not be able to create enough offense when the times get tough. But, I mean, it really just comes down to Marner and that contract negotiation for me. So, you know, that'll kind of drive what they do this summer, because there's a lot of no move clauses and whatnot that are in place. So I guess we'll see.
Do you understand how crazy that is to say that those five players can't drive enough offense? I know that we've seen it. There's logical reason to why, but it just, if you just take a step back, it is pretty crazy. But forget about what you think. What would you do? Would you run it back?
Again, it depends on Marner. I mean, he's the one that kind of holds all the cards here, pretty much. I mean, if he's, it really just depends on the good negotiation. I think if he comes back and he's saying that, you know, I want to be a Leaf, let's do 9 million times whatever, same contract, 5 years or 6 years, then yeah, I think they'll do it. I think they're going to run it back. But if he comes back with, I want Matthews money or just under it, then I think the negotiation gets more difficult, and now we start talking about trades and things like that. So I don't think, like, Chalibing really has much say in the matter. I think a lot of it has to do with Marner, and if you want to look at trading Riley, he also has a no move clause as well. So
they all do.
You're all in the same position, right? So when it comes to running it back, I think the players hold all the cards here.
Well, and they hold all the cards, and if you want to trade them, it's pennies on the dollar, because they're picking where they want to go, and you're not getting the true value. This, you end up getting a little bit more value in these situations in hockey than you do in, say, a basketball situation. Look at the Bradley Beal contract last year. Kevin, are you breaking him up? What are you doing?
you can't, like, they need to break themselves.
I guess that's a better way to put it. Yeah.
But I don't know. The core four argument from, I guess, fans and the media is a little bit nuts. Like, I think Marner is getting too much of the criticism. I think he deserves plenty of criticism. It's maybe a little bit overboard. But when you talk about what you're going to do, like, if none of them have no move clauses, you're trading John Tavares, right? If you're going to be as cold and ruthless as possible.
Absolutely.
Yep. He's the one who's not worth the contract the most, right? Riley's not going anywhere. Nylander's not going anywhere. Matthews 100% isn't going anywhere. So your only option's Marner. And it seems like half the fan base is going, okay, we got to trade Marner because you need to do something different, rather than you need to trade Marner because you're going to win the trade. It's going to improve the hockey club. But at the same time, like, Marner's got a year left and the negotiation has to start, right? Like, you don't want to lose Marner for nothing in the off season. You got to start with asking Marner what he wants. And, you know, I don't know what this guy, like, he put himself in a spot where he's going to get plenty of criticism if it didn't work, right? Like, he's the ninth highest cap hit in the league right now. I think he's 100K less than Tavares. So he's really tied for seventh, essentially. And I was looking at it, and it's like, guess how many players in the league make more than a million more than Marner? So aren't within a million of them. It's two.
Two,
Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon. That's it. So he's putting himself up there with Eichel and Barkov and Pasternak and Matthews. Pretty close to Matthews. And, you know, if he wants to be a hometown hero, I can tell you how to do it. You do the Jason Spezza route. You do the Mark Giordano route. No, he's not going to take less than a million.
Jason Spezza, he gets a statue.
What if he took 10 million? What if he took 11 million? Right? Like, if he takes the same contract, the cap goes up, he'll get way better PR here. But I don't know. Like, he's a player who doesn't, who on one hand seems to care what everyone says, but at the same time hasn't been the best PR. Like, you heard the comments at the media. You've heard, you know, when Matthew signed the extension way back when, it was like just a weird story.
Where his agent threatened to send him to Switzerland if he didn't get what he wanted. That story?
Well, it's like, at some point, the Leafs have to look at this. If he wants, let's say the extreme, like if he wants 15 million, the Leafs are going to say no. And then it becomes a question of, okay, can we send you somewhere where you're going to extend? Like, we're not going to pay you this. You can play the year out, or you can get guaranteed money now. Like, most players will want the guaranteed money now.
But they need to do that now. You can't do a $10.9 million player during the season, like at a trade debt.
No, they'd have to do it in the offseason.
You have to do it now.
They have to do it to a spot he wants to go.
Yeah.
And then,
where they can fit him under the cap, where there's suitable assets coming back.
You'll fit him under the cap. People will fit Mitch Marner under the cap. But the trade value is determined based on his asking price. Like, if he wants 15 million, if I'm an other GM, like, it's like he's like a rental. Like, you have one year of surplus value, and then it's an iffy contract, right? If it's a more reasonable ask, then I think teams will give up more. But
yeah. I don't think it's gonna be. Yeah, obviously that's extreme, right? But like I think the highest he would go is Matthews' contract. Like, I could not see him going over that unless...
Who's giving him that?
I mean, on the open market, if he's threatening to go out there, like a team that is looking for a star or something like that, but I could not see him asking Toronto for over Matthews' contract. It just doesn't make sense.
Who knows, though, this guy? Like,
you have no idea. Could you
imagine? He would, like...
Well, you can ask for whatever you want. Doesn't mean you're going to get it.
I think the last negotiation, like we should not be expecting anything. Like, we should be expecting anything, right? I mean, like, would anyone have guessed some of the rumors, and maybe they were true, maybe they weren't, about the Switzerland or like the offer sheets? Like, I don't think anything's out of the realm of possibilities, but yeah, I mean.
But no one expected him to get 10-9 last time. And no one expected Nylander to get 11-5
now. No one expected him to get the 6-9, whatever it was the last time.
So I think Marner's gonna,
I think 6-9
be above 12. Yeah. Like, I think he wants more than
Sorry, Kevin. At the time, though, Nick, it was high. Like the rumors around that were that Dubas caved at the last minute and gave him like his highest asking price. Now,
yeah, less than
12 months down the road, it was one of the best deals in the league.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So that's.
If anything, I think Dubas was really lowballing him. Like,
oh, for sure.
Like, yeah. Really lowballing him. And Nylander probably got like fair-ish value. And I think that's why he came so aggressively this past contract, because he was saying, well, Matthews and Marner got what they wanted. This one, we're going to make sure that we get what we want. So
that we pay him and he immediately stops playing well. That's the fair thing to do. I'm being the, don't worry. This is what I do.
This is a very pro Nylander podcast here.
The Marner thing's interesting because like he got every penny last time and he got it right before the cap went flat. Right. So
yes,
he's made more money than like he signed at the perfect time. Like he's done very, very well relative to everyone else. And he has a chance to take a little bit less and be, I would say he's got a chance to be a hometown hero, even if he just took the exact same cap that he has now. That contract's going to look decent in a few years when the cap goes up. Like, you just put a lot less pressure on yourself the lower your cap it is. And, or he fights for every penny. I mean, I don't think he's going to get Matthews money, but I think he could be in the same realm. Like, Matthews at 13.25. I think Marner could be at like 12.5. I could see that.
I mean, he's a pending UFA at the end of the day. I don't know about here, but we'll see what Treliving does. But I mean, at the end of the day, he's a pending UFA.
Don't he holds do all the this leverage. To me.
He holds all the leverage. He can.
Well, you guys made the point. The open market. Yeah, I could for sure. John Tavares and rightfully so was offered $13 million by the San Jose Sharks and took less to come to Toronto.
That was years ago though.
I know. Like, I'm saying open market, anything goes. Some owner just got in and wants to spend his money and wants to have a superstar that sells tickets, sells, you know, gets the season seats up, gets the jersey sales up. I get all that. Fine. But we're talking, this is the Everything Leafs podcast, not the Sometimes Sharks podcast. What are we going to do? Oh, that's, I as a, just, I'm the fan. I'm not a writer. So right now, I'm going to ask this. If his agent called Brad Treliving right now and said, I will take 10-9 over 8 years, that's the max.
Do it. Leafs should do it.
And your thoughts would be, I'm happy about that?
At 10-9, yeah.
10-9, 8 years. He's what? He's 27 now?
Yeah.
So you're paying him 10-9?
Nylander just got 11-5. They're not getting him for less than Nylander.
I'm not saying I love that contract either.
I think the contract's fine. I think it's good. I'm probably more on the boat of if Marner's open to the Leafs at least looking at their options in terms of trade, I would at least explore that.
But if that's Marner an opportunity, for in a
let's say 10. Oh, let's say if he's going somewhere else, let's say like 11-5. If he's doing 10-9 in Toronto.
Pause that, because this is about, we want to win a Stanley Cup, boys. That's what we're here for.
I think the Leafs can, to answer that question, I think the Leafs can find a player that, like, I just think they need another like elite or high end puck carrier, like especially for the playoffs. I think Marner's even as a forward. I think they need like a really good puck
especially carrier. Especially the trade Marner. Like they need a forward.
100%.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And yeah.
I think Marner is an okay puck carrier, but I think as soon as things get tight, I mean really the Leafs have Nylander that can back up defenses and Tavares definitely can't anymore. Matthews is a good puck carrier, obviously. But I think if they could turn that into like a $7 or $8 million good player, and then use that surplus kind of extra cap hit to get a defenseman or something, then yeah, I think it could be worth it. But of course, this you're running the risk of kind of another Kadri situation where you have things that have happened in the past, like the two suspensions, you look to trade them and then you ultimately lose the trade in the long run, right? So it's a tricky situation. At 10-9, I think if the Leafs signed that, I'd be fine with it, like more than fine. But if I was in that situation, I would definitely at least explore trades if that's something Marner would be into.
10-9 is a decent, like the cap's going up.
From asset management, yes. It's the
but for
right,
me, it's
he automatically gets like, a no move clause after that, by the way, because that's involved yeah. in there. So now we're back to where we can you win with these four guys?
Tavares has 1 year left, so like,
okay, then sorry, and you don't think he's signing some $5 million deal? Not for
yeah, but
of course
the
not.
Cap distribution is going to be different.
Yes, it will. Be.
No longer the core four.
I'm just not worried about asset management right now. They just ripped my heart out again. They ripped all of our hearts out again. I want to talk about can they win with these four guys, Kevin and Nick?
Of course
can they win
they
with
can.
Them?
Of course they can.
They can. They can. But they will need. Like I think the core four.
I don't think they can.
You think well, it's impossible?
Well, nothing's impossible.
Yeah. What do you mean by
Connor McDavid says, I'll sign here for the minimum, boys. I just want to be a part of the team. And we get Nathan MacKinnon and Sidney Crosby coming too. Yeah, I'm sure. But I'm sorry. It's fair for me to ask the question. They haven't done it yet. Do you not see a scenario where you would just go, hey, forget it. We just need a shakeup. I even looked up buying out Marner, but it's a $10.3 million cap hit.
Yeah, no, like for me, it matters. Obviously, the core four matters, but I think there needs to be a lot of spotlight on who the other players are. And if you look going forward, like they have Knies. We'll see what that contract. He's in his contract year already coming up. They'll have Robertson. Hopefully, Cowan, you know, pulls out to be a good player. Minton. So, like, they have surplus value in those types of contracts. So, they definitely have years ahead where if they do stick with the core four, they can still be competitive. They can still be one of the better teams that they ice, even when we look at teams in the past. They have that opportunity to do it. But can they win with the core four? 100%. But, of course, it's not like they don't have... Well, they actually don't really have an option to move off Marner unless he wants to move himself. But yeah, I think in general, I think you can win with these four players, but I'm not completely going to defend those four players and that core four as much as I have in the past. For me in the past, I've always said, run it back. This year was an outlier, et cetera, et cetera. I think for me now, I think we have a large enough sample size to see what this team is, and I think part of me personally does, I don't know if they can fill in the blanks as well as they have in the past unless they really hit on these rookies and entry-level contract players like Knies and Cowan and Minton. So that's where I'm at. I think that's why I'm a bit more open to potentially trading Marner, etc.
They got 1 year left of this core four before there's changes, because Tavares is going to take less. In that year, they have plenty of contracts to build around the roster that are team friendly, right? Like they have Bobby McMahon at 1.35, great value. They have McCabe at 2. They have Wall cheap. They have Benoit cheap. They have plenty of Knies. They have maybe Cowan and Minton coming next year. We'll see. There's definitely a path that they could win next year. There's plenty of room for improvement based on last offseason. There's plenty of good defensemen out there you can go at. I tweeted at the list earlier today. Like there's tons of defensemen you can go get. They can win next year. Now, I think the question is, do you win a Marner trade and end up better in the long run, or do you lose it? And you could win it. Like you have to work with the player because he probably wants, he'd rather sign now than the next offseason and have to wait and like risk injury or whatever. Just take your money now. Maybe he wants to change the scenery, so maybe it's an easier move. But again, like, what are you getting in return? It's hard to get a player as good as Marner.
Just get PLD. Call it a day, right, Kevin?
Your no favorite? Chance. We'll keep him.
We'll see. He's off to play for Canada.
Let's play a little game before we get to... I got two more after this, but let's do stay or go. Okay? So I'm going to read out list of players that, to start with, are UFAs or RFAs. And you guys just rapid fire tell me, do they stay or do they go?
Are these our opinions or predictions?
You know what? Great question. You guys tell me. How do you guys want to do it? Predictions?
let's do both.
Let's do prediction. Sure. You want to do both?
Yeah, let's do both.
Well, let's do the predictions and then we'll circle back after and you guys tell me if
just
if
say both.
You guys
just
would
say both.
Be fine. This is your show. I'm just here. all right, let's start with Tyler Bertuzzi.
I think he's gonna go.
And what would you do?
Depends on the contract. If he's taking,
we can't do that. Let's assume
the contract.
If he takes the minimum. Let's say that he's the same number now. Contract. Okay, great.
He's gone. It depends. You can't say it depends.
Yeah, fair. Okay, let's just do prediction. He's gone. He's gone.
He's gone. Kevin,
Nick's
he's gone for you.
Playing a game.
We play easier games than this
one. Kevin, is he gone for you?
I think he's gonna go, and I don't think I'd have him back. I think he's gonna get a bit of a raise. I'd rather use that money for a center or a defenseman.
Domi.
Oof. Stays probably.
I think he's gonna go. This guy goes everywhere. Like,
I think if he gets some term, I think he'll sign it. He's just been bouncing around teams. It's a hometown team. I don't even want to think about it. If we'll see. I think
he makes three. Let's say it's 3/5.
No, he's taking
that.
He's not
no,
taking
no
that.
Yeah.
He's not taking that.
Ooh, 3/5 years?
Spicy.
The 5 years is iffy, but.
He's been on 17 hockey teams already.
He's going to take $3 million. I think he's going to get like $5 million for someone.
Wow.
Good luck.
Maybe.
Love you, Domi. I do love Domi.
He's going to get $5 million. That's why I think he's going to leave, and that's why I didn't want to pay him. If it's $3 million, yeah. Like, there's surplus value there. Do the term, whatever. That'd be nice, but I guess you're paying him until he's 35. So
that's exactly.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Connor Dewar.
Stay. Sebby, he's RFA.
He is RFA, yeah, but never know.
He'll stay.
I'm going to give you two more RFAs quickly, just because they are very interesting players, in my opinion, about where they end up. I'm going to go Nicholas Robertson and Noah Gregor, because I think the easy answer is they both stay, but they are interesting names.
Gregor, yeah. I mean, Gregor. Well, Robertson, we care. Come on. Gregor stays, I'll say, and then Robertson. That's an interesting one.
He doesn't even have Arbrights.
I think Robertson's going
to
stay.
He does not have Arbrights, no.
I think Robertson will stay, too. I think they'll be able to get him to a pretty good contract after the year he had.
Problem with him is just he doesn't have trade value.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's do some easy ones before we do the hard ones.
I think Lilligren might be gone.
Well, let's do the easy ones first.
Let him host the show.
TJ Brody.
Gone.
Yeah, he's healthy scratch in the playoffs. That's pretty.
Joel Edmondson.
Oh boy. Gone, hopefully.
Mark Giordano.
I liked him too. Gone.
He's fine. I don't say I liked him, but like
who Edmondson?
Edmondson yeah. He's talking about.
Like I said, like you lower the ceiling of what he can do, but I thought based on my expectations he was fine. But again, I hope he's
brought in to help the penalty kill, led the team in PK time in the playoffs, and that did not go well. And he's going to get paid, like, what, $2 million or something? Like
probably more. I think he was on 3.2, right?
Who? Edmondson?
Edmondson, yeah.
$8.75.
No, that's off. That's
but that's with retention.
No, that's retention, yeah. I thought he was, like...
So then you have, yeah.
High twos. Giordano's
retiring.
Yeah.
Gio's retiring. What about Bush?
I think they might bring him back.
It's the same as last time. Like, they'd bring him back, but, like...
If he gets that overpaid deal like he got,
which
then he's gone.
Like, we've seen it with Justin Shen. Hall and Luke Shen.
Yeah.
Lobushkin last time, it was like, holy crap. I think he's got good luck. Like, he gets traded to the Leafs at the perfect time, right? The contract year. It felt like he was going to get like a minimum contract, and he comes here. He's probably going to sign for like $3 million. Guy's got. We'll trade for him again in 2 years. That's the
point. I think he's going to get a good contract, but the problem is I think Treliving is going to be the guy that give him the good contract. That's my prediction, but we'll see.
A good contract for Boosh.
I don't think so. I think there's so many right-shooting defensemen this year. Like, it's kind of weird. Like, we never see this.
It just depends on how... I mean, we'll talk about this in a sec, but it just depends how, I guess, aggressive. There is a ton of right-shooting defensemen, but...
They're getting Tyler Myers, by the way.
Don't... No.
The tallest guy. They love tall guys. They're getting Tyler Myers.
Let's go to the goalies.
Quick thing about the tall thing. Is I think it'll be really interesting. Obviously, we've seen, you know, the scouting staff, Wes Clark, when Dubas was there. We see them do pretty well at the draft and get quite a few really good players. It'll be interesting this year because this is Treliving's first draft. He wasn't part of the draft last time. Like, if they start drafting like 6'4", 6'5" players like every second round,
they kind of have like they drafted a lot of size.
Who was that Finnish defenseman that Dubas drafted in the second round that was 6'7"?
No, that wasn't Dubas. No.
Was it Lou?
Only Rasinen.
Rasinen. Yes. I thought that was
No, that was the 2017. Yeah, that was the
Lou. Was it that early?
2017, yeah.
I guess that's why I host and you guys talk. What about the goalies? Sammy and Martin Jones.
Sammy's done, I think.
Yeah.
I think they'll go a different direction. Jones,
I can see. Tweet about the goalie market?
No, I missed it.
It's my God. Barren.
So the top two cap hits on free agents for goaltenders.
Probably the Leafs guys then.
I mean, Murray, who else? And Samsonov.
Is it Samsonov too?
Well, yeah. Okay, Matt Murray.
3-5-5.
I thought Murray. I thought of Murray. But like, I didn't think of Samsonov.
He's 3-5-5, and he's the second highest paid goalie heading into the UFA.
Diamonds in the rough. That's gotta find some value there.
Last one, Mitch Marner. Stay or go?
I think he's gonna stay, but.
I 50-50. You know what? I'll predict he's gonna go. I think there's enough kind of fire around it. I don't know if the fan base really matters, but I think there was enough evidence from the last negotiation, and maybe there's some scars from that I think there's a chance. Actually, I read today that there was he was like somewhat open or wasn't completely against being traded last year at the end of the season.
Yeah, choice last year. That's why it seemed.
That's the thing. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Dubas came out with that press conference talking about the core four and whatnot. So sometimes I do wonder what would have happened there. But yeah, they did have a choice and a lot more leverage last year. So I'll say he goes. But again, it's the chance of that is so low because of that no move clause and whatnot.
I think it's 8 years, 12 million.
That's the prediction in Toronto.
In Toronto.
Oh my God.
Oh. That should go well.
$500,000 more than you.
All right. Two more topics. God, that killed me. Two more topics here. We didn't touch on coaching. And I think that's the most common will he go topic that we have right now in Leafs Twitter. Sheldon Keefe had a few moments in these playoffs, especially with his comments post-game that were interesting, referring to the team in the third person after Game 7 surely stirred up a bit of a storm there. But I think the consensus around the board is that even though his extension kicks in July 1st, that we've seen him coaching his last game as a Toronto Maple Leaf boys. Do we agree on that one? Or like, is Craig Berube already in the door?
I don't think just yet for Berube, but I think Keefe most likely will get fired. I think them having the press conference yesterday with Keefe and the players and then management to be on a different day later in the week kind of is pretty telling. His comments did sound like he kind of knew that his job was up for, you know, he was up for firing, I guess. Overall, I think he's been a fine coach. I think he'd take a lot of criticism in the last 2 years. There's definitely things that, you know, even Kevin and I over the years have criticized him for, especially in the playoffs. But I think overall, he's been a fine coach. I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to like usage and looking at natural stat geek, stat trick, geez, over games and seeing how Keefe uses his players and zone starts and different situations. So I've quite enjoyed like watching Keefe, the way that he kind of manipulates the game that way. I think he's really good at it, actually. But at the end of the day, like you don't win playoff series that you're supposed to win. And ultimately, very like good coaches get fired. And I think he's a pretty good coach. I think it's probably just time for a change. So that's where I'm at with Keefe.
I think it's going to come down to Shanahan because he's got to go to ownership and break the news. And I think the Babcock thing just did not go over well with how much they owed Babcock at the end of that and how long was left on the contract. So if it wasn't for the extension, I think he'd be gone for sure. I still think he'll be gone, but I don't know. Toronto's a market that wants everyone gone right now. And it seems like Shanahan's a lot more, you know, and I think if you're Shanahan and you're saying like, I don't think I should be gone. Maybe he's a little bit more patient and, you know, he hired everyone or had a part to play in hiring everyone. And Keith extended after Dubas left. Like, I know that was the original relationship, like dating back to the Sioux, but they kept him around and must have known, like, full on well that this could happen this year. So it's not like they should be unprepared for it. Like, I'm sure part of the conversation would be, okay, if we lose first round next year, are we making a change and okay with the extra 2 years in the contract? You'd think because it's the Leafs and how much money they make, they'd be willing to pay two coaches, but who knows? Like, it's a weird structure at ownership. So I'll say go, but who knows at this point? Like, it's tough to know with Keith without even knowing, like, starting at the top. Like, is Shanahan staying? It seems like it because they're having that press conference on Friday. Mm-hmm. But who knows at this point?
That Babcock thing messed up everyone's thinking around MLSC, where it's like they would spend any amount of money if it's not against the cap to try and make the team as good as possible. And I know that going into it, they didn't want to have a lame duck coach, which is what Keith would have been this year. It's another conversation around what's going to happen at the end. If they go on a 3-game losing streak, are we talking about, have you talked to management? Have you talked to ownership and all of that? But I agree. It's, if those stories hadn't come out about them being pissed off, paying, you know, Babcock the extra years after the fact, plus the stories about them not firing him after that 2019 Boston series, and then waiting until after that game, I think it was in Vegas, where Marc-Andre Fleury had that huge glove save that they lost on that game.
On Malgin, I think.
And then all of a sudden, it was on Malgin. Malgin, what was it? Malgin Island, Beehive? What was his thing? He had a
Malgin Hive.
Malgin Hive. I have a story about where I was at that time. I won't tell it on this podcast because it's PG, but I was in Niagara Falls. We'll just put it that way. And I think that that's messed some people up with this. I think he is gone, but I don't know who it would be. Obviously, everyone's hoping for Rod the Bod. Craig Berube's been floated around. There's names that we don't even know yet. We'll see.
So Rod the Bod is coaching currently on the TV screen.
He is without a contract, though. So Leaf fans will try and we'll get Tulski and Rod Brindamore coming over to the team at the end of this year. To send us off here, because there's going to be a lot more podcasts where we get to talk about off seasons and free agents and trade moves and all of that. This should be a little bit more of a eulogy or a funeral type of sign off for the Leafs. But Kevin, you put out a tweet talking about, you know, assuming the amount of cap space, you know, what this team has in space, and then some names that you would want to target given what you think the team needs. Why don't you explain that a little bit more on the pod? Nick, we'll get your reaction before we sign off.
Yeah, they got plenty of cap space here because Brody's a free agent, Bertuzzi, Domi, Samsonov. So they can get creative. I think if it was me, I would try to move on from David Kampf. You know, probably give up an asset to even free up a little bit more. I think Ryan Reeves, you can say the same thing. Like, healthy scratch in the playoffs and really have the best series. I think, I don't know, saw what I need to see. I thought he was pretty good down the stretch, but doesn't really offer a lot of upside. I'd go cheap fourth line, and then I think you need a third line center. Like, Tavares at 5-on-5 is, you know, not the best come playoff time at scoring. I really like the O'Reilly addition last year and how you could potentially go Matthews one line, Marner second line, Nylander third line. But I don't think Holmberg can be your third line center, and I don't think you can go. I like Yarncroke. I think he's a fine player, but when your third line doesn't score and then you come back with Reeves on the fourth line, like, that fourth line with Reeves couldn't take defensive zone starts. It was just like a weird lineup they had this year. I think third line center is my top priority other than right shooting defensemen, which seems to be the case every year, but there are plenty of right shooting defensemen this year, right? Like, just Matt Roy would be, I think, a pretty good fit. I think Chris Tanev, especially if he'll take a bit of a hometown discount, I think that's a perfect fit. It's just term that you're worried about there. I think they're going to get multiple right shooting defensemen, is my guess. We could see someone like Zadorov who had interest. I don't know what one of the contracts might be scary, but they definitely have some space here. And McCabe extension's the other thing I think they'll probably look at, but it's going to be interesting. Like, there is flexibility. I know, even if everyone says run it back, but when there is that much cap space, you'll see changes to the roster. Obviously, if it's Marner, you're going to see a ton of changes to the roster. But even if the four stay, I think you'll see a different team next year.
You didn't mention goalie, but we talked about it's Barron. Nick, what are you doing, buddy? What are you thinking right out of the gate here?
Yeah, pretty much very similar. They do have the cap space. I would definitely try to avoid like a Nikita Zaitsev type situation. Like I just wouldn't want them to be in a situation where
no, you don't say.
Yeah, I mean like that's what I'm very scared of though. I mean like Kevin, you mentioned Tyler Myers there. Like there's definitely situations.
Look at that, though. Like you could.
There's definitely situations where, you know, we're talking, when we look at the right Ds, a lot of them are kind of in their early 30s. I'm hoping that because there's so many right defensemen that, you know, he won't kind of give a lot of term. But I mean, at the end of the day, Treliving did have a few buyouts and some bad contracts, long-term contracts with Calgary. So that's something when he first got hired, I was saying for last offseason, I didn't want that to happen. I definitely don't want that to happen this year. So I could see them offering one to Zadorov. I feel like there's kind of a lot of things that align there for him to come in, kind of, I guess, be like a better Edmondson type on the left side. Alexander Carrier, I think he's just a solid player. Doesn't really have the size, which, you know, Treliving seems to like, but he's 27, good cap hit. I could see them kind of getting him for some value. But yeah, like Kevin was saying, Sean Walker's there, Tanev, Roy, Brendan Montour would be kind of interesting. So they definitely have options to kind of make a blue line that looks pretty good, especially compared to past couple of years. But yeah, the forward group, especially the center group, looks a lot more thin. So they might have to get a little bit creative there in terms of trade to fill that void.
Tulsky, Rob Brindamore. Brett Pesce. Let's just start it.
We should just go to Carolina then.
I'm waiting for Pesci's not playing tonight. I wanted to see him. Not that I haven't seen him, but like.
Is he hurt or healthy scratch? Because healthy scratch isn't. Okay. I just want to be sure.
Healthy scratch in case of.
In case of a trade to the Leafs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. they're just making sure he's okay for us.
Boys, anything before we sign off?
Brindamore is making. Tulsky's making. Told Brindamore. To tell Pesci because they're all going to leave.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine it's I don't know. It's going to be an interesting week. I mean, I'll say that. And obviously, Friday is the management's going to be talking. It feels like every day. What's that?
The quote police will be out on that day.
Oh, for sure. So, hopefully, we don't get any respect in the handshake line type things. But yeah, this week seems like from Monday to Friday is going to take forever.
Well, during that time, you can continue to follow Nick D'Souza and Kevin Papetti on Twitter. Don't follow me. Trust me, nothing coming out of me. But follow the two boys here. Everything that's coming up, you're going to hear directly from them. Thank you for listening to the Everything Leafs podcast.
We'll and actually, before we go, go, before ahead. We go, actually, thank you, Sean, for being on this. And you're going to be seeing Sean a lot more. This is one of those situations where Kevin and I realized that a lot of the cap, well, 100% of the cap was going to two players. So we've taken a bit of a step back and now we're trying to kind of spread out among three people so that you guys get more podcasts and just better content in general. So, we've broken up the core two. So now it's the core three. So,
no, you kept the core two. You're just trying to surround the core two with more depth. Yeah. That allows for better scoring in the playoffs, right?
Honestly, so like Kevin's the Matthews. You'll be the Hyman. I'm usually the Connor Brown type situation. So
love the Hyman. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time.